Now we take you back to the night of March 5th, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
I'm getting a lot of messages on Fast Blast, not a lot, a few, saying that they're through to the website and have the information. Now, I have a really, really good provider here at the house, a big pipe, as it were, and my website has a giant pipe, and I can't get through to Kathleen's site. As a matter of fact, the message I'm getting is the document contained no data, try again later, or contact the server's administrator. That's what I get when I try to go to Kathleen's site. So if some people are getting through, and some people are getting the information, how could it possibly be that the majority of us are not? That is weird, Kathleen.
Very strange, but that happens a lot. It really does.
Well,
keep trying, folks. It'll open up sooner
or later. I guess that's right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Kathleen Keating. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Kathleen, I don't believe in Jesus Christ at all. And as a matter of fact, I was raised in a religious home. And I, over the years, have developed, well, I did a lot of study also in religions, but I've developed a thing with my inner being where it talks to me. And it tells me that there's earth changes that are coming, but it also tells me that I don't have to worry about them, that I follow my feelings, and nothing bad can happen to me. Right now, my feelings have led me into Europe. I live in Germany now. I'm American. I don't live in America no more, because I just don't feel safe there. Would you say that my feelings are right on this?
I know a lot of people that don't feel safe here with what's coming, and people that know what's coming are very uncomfortable with it.
Well, I know my inner being tells me that when this thing happens for about a year, there's going to be total chaos worldwide. And I really do believe it, that this stuff's going to happen. I mean, we have the mad cow disease over here. We have...
we could go on and on. Yes, all the signs are there. I agree with you. But whether or not it means what Kathleen says it means, I haven't grasped. I just can't grasp that yet.
I understand that, you know. But like I said, my inner being says that as long as we trust our feelings, because it tells me that there's only two of them, that which feels good and that which doesn't, and always go after that which feels best. When I find myself in a situation where I don't feel good, I get out of it because I'm always trying to feel good. And I guess in the Bible, Christ says, seek joy. And that would be a message that I could give is always seek joy.
Always. As long as that doesn't go into seeking pleasure, because I think there's a real fine line there. And when we start going to that because it feels good, I think we run a very big risk to losing our souls.
You know,
I think there's common sense inside that says, well, this is a good thing or this is a bad thing.
I've always complained that most pleasurable things in life are bad for you, or at least we're told they are. The things that give us pleasure, the little stupid things, whether it's having a drink at night when you get home from work, or it's smoking cigarettes, or it's chasing after the women, or whatever it is that really is pleasurable... is not good for us or our souls.
Well,
yes?
I think everything in moderation. I mean, if you're married, chasing women isn't the thing to do. But I think if you smoke a little, that's okay. If you drink a little, that's okay. The Bible says everything in moderation.
A little earlier we had a call from a gentleman you may recall who suggested that the church at one time allowed you to buy exceptions. In other words, you could have an indulgence of some sort as long as you paid a certain amount of coin.
Well, I've not been a follower of that. I'm not sure, you know, whether it was just simply to raise money. I don't think that that can be done. I think you can say prayers and get indulgences. You don't need to pay for them.
Other Catholics believe that you can indulge during the week and then repent upon Sunday when you confess, and that you walk away clean.
What if you die on Wednesday?
Well, yeah, there's that. But, I mean, you still will have eliminated on all the previous Sundays all the previous bad things that you thought you could get away with during the week.
You're going to pay for it in purgatory. I mean, I know that's a big topic that people don't believe in it, but I do believe in purgatory, and I think that you may be able to confess that on Saturday and go to Mass on Sunday, But I think ultimately you're going to have to pay some time because your soul is stained from those indulgences, overindulgences.
What do you think purgatory is?
I think it is a learning process that gets us to get away from our earthly attachments, whether it's jewelry, money, food, sexual forays or whatever. I think that it's designed to cleanse us of our final attachments.
So in purgatory, there would be none of that stuff?
No. And we would come to the realization that they weren't important on Earth and the whys of it.
And would we always rise from purgatory to heaven, or would we? Would that be a place where we...
You don't stay in purgatory forever. You stay until your soul is ready to see God.
Yes, but I'm asking, do all rise from purgatory, or are those who don't make it?
There are people that don't make it into purgatory, and certainly people we've heard...
No. In other words, do we all graduate to a higher level from purgatory?
Yes. Uh-huh. Keep moving up until you move out. But
so,
you never move down. If you made purgatory...
Made purgatory, it's like summer school or something.
Well, yeah, on a real hot day with no air conditioning.
Oh, God. Now, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Kathleen Keating. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Excuse me. It's the speed of these events that are happening is what really captures me. And sometimes the underreporting, or when it's reported in such small little sound bites that people can't put it together. Because my question to you is this. You mentioned the Russians and the Chinese in the first hour, and the speed since within the last 2 years how they've forged their strategic alliance together, pulling their, which is about 100,000 or hundreds of thousands of troops from their borders, and, of course, all the other alliances they've made with each other. And then you also mentioned Israel, and within the last few hours, and as we're speaking right now, Israel has moved their tanks into what they call the A areas, which are the total Palestinian occupied areas. So that place is ready to go. Now, there's a little story here, and I'll wrap this up quick. It started a couple days ago on Kosovo-Macedonian borders, little insurgents by the Albanians there. And it was really nothing, a couple blurbs. But as I'm reading right now, and this happened just a few hours ago, NATO sending their U.S. troops to Kosovo clash is the title of the article in the Washington Times. So my question is this to you. Things can be happening in a couple of weeks. I think the time, I don't think people realize how short the time is, because if Israel goes, the Arabs go, we go into Iraq, we get tied down in the Mid East, we also get tied down on the worst place on this planet to fight a war. We have 40,000 troops in that Kosovo area, which is nothing but mountains. They're tied down. And if China makes a move on all this happening simultaneously, and I believe that this is all planned, and this could be happening in a couple of weeks, what do you think about that scenario?
I think you're right. I think that we're going to see us getting sucker punched into Taiwan for sure. And while we're distracted,
yes,
we have the Chinese troops on our borders,
and like I say, we have our NATO troops tied down in Kosovo and the Mideast. We have actually a war on three fronts, and I haven't even, you haven't even mentioned the North Koreans making their move to South. It could all happen.
Oh, it could, and they can reach us. They can reach Los Angeles with their missiles, so.
I just wanted to get your opinion. God bless you. I think you're doing a good job.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call, sir. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Kathleen Keating. Good morning.
Hello. Yes, hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi, this is Bill from West Hartford, Connecticut. I am an atheist, a rational atheist. Let me bring this down to logic and reason and science. Now, Art, instead of saying God, G-O-D, as a supposed intelligence creating all this, there's another intelligence out there that you and I would agree as a studier of UFOs. That's ETs. Now, what I'm trying to lead to is Michio Kaku talked about type 1, type 2, type 3, et cetera, civilizations.
Yes.
A type 2 or 3 or 4 would have the energy, the power to control a planet. Now, bear with what I'm trying to say. It has to do with ETs, type 2 or 3 or 4, who may be controlling the Earth and our weather. Let me explain. First of all, in the Bible, Genesis is wrong, where it says, in the beginning, God, et cetera, et cetera. We know the Big Bang Theory from astronomy. I am an amateur astronomer. You know, the beginnings, as opposed to Genesis, does not tie in with cosmology and astronomy. Number two, evolution is correct. Evolution, which your guests...
Bill.
Yes.
Slow down.
I'm trying to say that...
Bill. Yes. Slow down.
I'm trying to say that modern-day science shows that the biblical God is wrong. Therefore, if there were an intelligence that inspired people years ago, maybe it's ET extraterrestrials, and this is an evolutionary test, and instead of people being raptured up, they're captured into UFOs as specimens if we have a nuclear war. What I'm trying to say is the ETs are seeing this as an evolutionary test. If we can
okay,
make
Bill,
it
you're speeding up again. I'm going to take it for you from there. Kathleen, is it possible that God, we'll use that word so everybody understands what we're talking about, the Creator, created others as well as ourselves?
I think they're out there. Whether the ETs are demons or not, I think they were created by God. I think that they were not demons to begin with, or what appears to be extraterrestrials. I think that we have to accept the fact that there may be different things out there that we don't know about, but as far as man itself, I think we were the, that's it. But I think someone created the ETs that we're seeing, and I think that's God.
Well, why would it not be reasonable, if there are others, if there are ETs, that at some point in our evolution, I guess I shouldn't use that word with you, at some point in our development,
well, we don't
there
see
was,
any monkeys
there, there was intervention.
Yeah, and there was intervention with us.
But that intervention may have been from other creations. Why is that not outside the realm?
Well, I think that we're going to see that that's an improbability. I think we're going to have it browbeaten that maybe the ETs, you know, did intervene, and we're going to hear a lot about it. But the people that have really studied the ETs, that have had up close and personal contact with them, have a whole different opinion of them, Art. Not all of them get enlightenment, or they channel through and hear about these great and glorious plans that they have for man and how they
oh, I know.
Help us out.
I know.
We're talking some serious...
I know. I tend to agree with those who think that they may be as negative or maybe completely negative and not positive at all, not fuzzy little beings
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
David Jacobs wrote a book called The Threat, which kind of backs that up. But that automatically does not make them devils or representatives of Lucifer or anything else. It may make them simply creations as we are creations, and we could have been tampered with. I mean, that's to me, that is inside the realm of possibility.
Well, I think they're tampering with us now. I think they've tampered with us from the beginning. The giants in the beginning of time have taken to the skies, and more or less the ETs now that we're seeing. So I think there's a history of it, not only in science, but in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible confirms their existence.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Kathleen Keating. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is George, and I'm in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Hi, George.
So I kind of get confused about east and west of the Rockies.
You're west of the Rockies, or on that line, anyway.
Yeah, well, in theory. Actually, I live right at the base of a 14,000-foot mountain.
Well, the phone company is not precise in their cutting of the east and the west of the Rockies. They're close, but not precise.
How true. Anyway, I think I have a little bit of a comment for you that might help you, and then I have a question for Kathleen very quick. I'm a nuclear engineer by trade, and I ran into some of the same kind of problems about show me and God can't exist. Maybe it's because of that Catholic upbringing. But as it turns out, what I found out in my studies of subatomic physics is that the universe is pretty much made of only two things, nothing and energy. Okay, matter does not exist in any way, shape, or form. And if you look at it from that point of view, then we could actually say that when God said he created man in his image, he literally meant that we're in his image. We're part of his creation. He thought us into being, the act of creation being thought, which is a use of energy, right?
Okay.
You with me?
Yes, I think.
Okay. This being the case, basically what that says is that mankind and all that we see and all that is just energy. And I don't believe in the devil, so I don't believe that there's some great conflict going on between a good and a bad. I don't believe
you
that
don't.
Happening.
You don't look around our world right now, and you don't see that conflict everywhere.
Well, I see conflict everywhere. Sure, I don't think.
But
there's
and you
force
okay, and you do believe in God, right?
Right.
then why do you not imagine the opposite? Since there are opposites to almost everything in the world right now, why wouldn't there be an opposite to God?
Well, I'm not so sure that I understand evil well enough and good well enough to be able to define them.
Okay, how do you explain it? What is it when a 15-year-old walks into a school, smiles, and starts killing people?
That's not a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all.
Right, and I can understand that. I can understand that. Does that mean that he was somehow influenced by something, by some spiritual external force that made him do that?
Well, see, that's where I start bending. Isn't it reasonable to presume that as one of the major possibilities?
No more than it is reasonable to assume that that a record album made him do it, or a certain kind of music made him do it.
A lot of people have a lot of trouble with that explanation. You know, that it's video games, or it's TV, or it's being left with a daycare center instead of mom and dad. A lot of people have a problem with that, because most people come up just fine being latchkey kids or whatever. This is so far removed, you know, walking in and just killing people. It's so far removed from the norm that it seems to me it demands that you at least... And I don't mean to be making these arguments for you, Kathleen, but it seems to me that you have to include that as one great possibility for those actions.
Well, you do. I mean, there's are positive forces, and there are negative forces and neutral forces. And sometimes, like today, the negative forces spin out of control, and that electron or neutron or whatever, they just spin off and things happen. And I think that positive energy is fighting negative energy right now, just to stay balanced.
Okay. Well,
all right, caller.
Anyway, the question I have for Kathleen, I don't know if that helped you or not. What I did is combined physics and something called the Kabbalah. And if you look at the literal Kabbalah and subatomic particle physics, you'll find that there's a correlation, and you might find that interesting to look into. Kathleen, the question I have for you is about the new Israeli government.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Al Sharon and... his new cabinet, or whatever they call themselves over there, are going to rebuild the Temple of David?
I
recently noted that they're now building moats, like around Jericho,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And things like that. It looks like they're heading towards maybe wanting to rebuild the temple.
I think that's definitely going to happen, and I think whether Sharon does it or somebody else, they're going to rebuild it. Mm-hmm. They're ready for it.
Your book... The Final Warning, right,
mm-hmm.
Is available now. We've got a telephone number, and your book really, I guess, is a blueprint for the final days. Is that a fair way to put it?
It is a good description.
It will describe exactly what will occur in the final days?
Right. With very few surprises, it should uncover a lot for people.
That's pretty heavy-duty information, folks. There have been a lot of odd occurrences around this book, unbelievable occurrences around this book, but you can get a copy. Believe us, it's set up now so you can get a copy. It's called The Final Warning by Kathleen Keating, and you maintain, Kathleen, there are people, even at this hour, awake, taking orders and calls.
Absolutely, and through to 9 o'clock tomorrow night, they'll be steady taking phone calls, and it'll be 9 to 9 until the orders stop coming in.
All right. Well, Kathleen, as always, thanks for coming on the air and scaring the hell out of all of us.
Thanks for having me, Art. I appreciate it.
Good night, Kathleen.
Good night.
All right, folks. That's it for now. Tomorrow night, Richard C. Hoagland is going to be here, and it's going to be quite a wild ride. So if it's been a while since you've heard Richard C. at his best, tune in tomorrow night. Otherwise, it's going to be a fascinating week. Remember, I said I've got this convention I'm going to on Friday night, Saturday morning. So Ian Punnett will be here, and we will make adjustments and do open lines. For now, that's it. I'm Art Bell. Night-night.